Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Kieran, I'm sorry I had to remind you
you're absolutely right, almost to do so.
On air, but I suspect I could see you drifting off. So I thought we'd have to make sure you knew that we had to do the talk into the interview with Stuart Andrews. Stuart Andrews is a sports minister, Kieran. He's been he's sort of taken over from Tracy Crouch, really, guiding. That's a new word. Guiding, yeah, that's the official full-length version of the word guiding. He's been guiding the football government's bill through Parliament. But he took time out from his busy schedule to have a chat with us, and very interesting it was too. Minister, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We realise how busy you are, and we'll try and take your time up with sensible grown-up questions as far as we possibly can. Obviously, the independent regulator is something that we'll be talking about more than anything else, but there are a couple of big stories we'd probably like to bookend the interview with. But the most important question, I'm afraid to say, and the one that our listeners will demand an answer to before we start, is what football team you support.
Well, I mean, obviously, as a Leeds MP, it's got to be Leeds. And, you know, it's looking all right at the moment. Got my fingers crossed.
Oh, it's a cracking game against Borough.
Yeah, we're not. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Leeds are one of those teams, obviously, for tradition purposes, I want to see them in the Premier League. But also, if they keep defending like that, I'm very happy to see them back in the Premier League, essentially.
Yeah, well, I can tell you all the people in my local pub are getting very excited. So, good.
The big story I want to talk to you about before we get on to the independent regulator, the scrapping of FA Cup replays. I'd be interested in your view on that. And I'd be particularly interested to learn if you were aware of that beforehand.
So, look, I mean, at the weekend, I had a lot of constituents coming up to me when I was around my constituency, really upset about this, really concerned about it. And obviously yesterday in the debate, it was raised a lot by members of parliament. You know, I have to say, no, I wasn't aware of it beforehand. And I think really this is one of the things I always encourage, is that proper consultation and discussion about these things is the way to go forward. You know, I get that there are issues in terms of a really busy fixture list, but it really is important to sort of discuss that, get round a table, talk about it, look at the options, rather than just, as it seems, making an announcement in the way that it was. And I do understand why fans are concerned about that. They, you know, it is that sort of David and Goliath opportunity that really benefits the clubs, certainly lower down the leagues, and I can understand why they're concerned. But really, you know, there is an issue to try and address here, but have all the options been explored? That is my question. And I know that my colleague, the Secretary of State, has already discussed this. So, you know, we'll see what transpires. But I do understand the concern that many of the clubs and particularly the fans have on this issue.
There are people, Minister, who say, well, if lower league clubs and non-league clubs are relying on the occasional one-off replay against big teams, then that's not an ideal financial model. But that, to me, that seems to be missing the point. It's just life is being made easier for six or seven clubs at the expense of the other 800 clubs who take part in the FA Cup, essentially, isn't it?
Well, and this is why I believe that people should have got round the table to discuss all of this, so that exactly the points you raise are properly thrashed out and understood. Because, of course, I think this, the thing that's really exciting about the FA Cup is that sometimes you hear of a town that you even have to think, where is that town? And suddenly they're in the limelight. And that's what makes that, cup so exciting. And I think to potentially lose that, it is an issue. So my message is really, get around that table, have a discussion, explore what all the options are. Because I understand there's an issue to be, to be resolved here. I get that. There are demands that make it challenging. But I'm pretty sure that, another option could be explored and discussed and, do that consultation. I think this is the frustration, and this is why we've done the regulator, is that too often fans feel that football is something that's happening to them rather than being a part of it.
That's a very good point about the geography. I don't think I would have known where Blyth was unless I knew about the history of most of my social history, in fact, comes from football, which is probably a mistake. The Football Governance Bill had its second reading this week. Can you tell us how that went, Minister? Are you happy with progress? Is there a realistic chance the legislation will be passed in this Parliament?
Well, I have to say that yesterday was a great moment. It's been we've been working really hard for a good couple of months, probably a year since the White Paper, to get a bill that does the job that the White Paper and, crucially, the fan-led review, which really started all of this, that the White Paper, legislation and the regulator will have the powers that are needed to address many of those issues that people raised with that fan-led review. The reception for it in Parliament was really positive. I mean, there will always be in these, when legislation's coming, there's always going to be areas of debate. And I get that. That's what we should do. We need to scrutinise it properly. But broadly, right across the chamber, people were welcoming this. They thought it was a good move. And it was one of those days, I have to say, that, was a joy to be in Parliament, because it was just amazing to hear the support for it. But also, I think, was an opportunity to reflect on why this was being done, particularly from MPs who represent clubs that have gone through those really horrible, challenging times. And for us to particularly look at the financial issues that do exist with some clubs. Now, we're not saying all clubs are run badly. Of course they're not. Some are run really well. But, when a club goes into administration, as I said yesterday when I was closing the debate, it's more than just a football club. Of course, it's massive for the fans when that happens. That distress is really, really challenging. But the wider implications for the community in which that club is based is significant. The whole community feel it, even if they're not particularly big football fans. That is the evidence that we have seen. And that's what has compelled us to do this, And I'm really looking forward to us now progressing with the bill. And you ask, is there a chance of this getting through? I think the commitment, and I've worked with my colleagues cross-party, because I'm being keen to make sure that we really focus on delivering this. And, I have to say, all of them have said the same. There's a shared ambition to get this done before the general election so that the regulator can start to get on with the job that it needs to do, which is to really support English football and make sure that the brilliance that it is around the globe continues, but also that we identify problems that may exist within a club at a much earlier stage, rather than the current situation where fans sometimes one morning wake up to the shock that their club has gone into administration.
It's good to hear that there's such support in Parliament, because party allegiances aside, I can't remember a piece of legislation that's been so popular amongst the man on the Clapham omnibus, as Kieran likes to say, and certainly in the Porson's Arms before the Palace game on Sunday, the amount of people that are talking about this, and I don't know, we'll come on to opposition to the regulator later, but I don't know any football fan who thinks it's a bad idea. And I know a lot of football fans who, through gritted teeth, are acknowledging that what a good piece of legislation it is. And also, it was fantastic to see Tracy Crouch in full flight yesterday. And Kieran was part of the fan-led review. Kieran and Tracy swapped some rather potty-mouthed text messages, I have to say, from time to time. But I think it's important to acknowledge the role that she played in this as well, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Look, Tracy is a good friend of mine, and she has done an amazing job. You know, the 100 hours of evidence, I think, that they heard has been phenomenal in building up the case that enabled us to then publish the white paper and now to get second reading of the bill done. And I also want to pay tribute to Kieran for the amount of work that he has done. I mean, you know, getting that information about what is the financial situation of football in England has been incredibly important in helping us to construct this legislation in a way that will address many of those issues. And, you know, I'm really grateful to everybody who's done it. And also a massive thank you to all the team here at DCMS. You know, there's been a really hard work going on to get this bill into the place that it needs to be. And so, yeah, I mean, and you say you've never heard of any, you know, a piece of legislation as popular as this. I would agree with you. Having been an MP for 14 years, I've never seen a bill introduced to Parliament that sort of is roundly welcome in the way that it was yesterday. And that was great to see.
Well, while you're in the business of thanking people, Minister, I've read a lot of stuff about it. If you want to, you know, want to include me in this, that's fine.
Of course, I will.
there is a couple of these next questions are from our listeners, so you know these will be sensible questions. Although one of the issues that was raised in the pub in South London on Sunday, I have to say, is the rumour that the regulator may be based in Manchester. Is there any truth in that?
Yes, there is truth in that. We've put out the advert for the chair and a couple of the non-execs, and in that advert it does say that the regulator will be based in Manchester. And, you know, there's good reason for this. You know, I want to make sure that, you know, not everything is in London. And, you know, it's really important that we, you know, we do have something as significant as this in a different part of the country. It's not to say that there won't be reach in all parts of the country. Of course there will be. But yeah, the Manchester is the chosen destination.
Say, I'm a very proud Londoner, Minister. And if I had my way, I would put a moat around the M25. And keep everything. But even I think that the National Stadium, for example, should be in Birmingham. It should be in the centre of the country, as far as I'm concerned. Should be accessible to all. You mentioned that you put the advert out. So what will the recruitment process be from now? Do you know what sort of person you're looking for? Will they need a football background, or would you prefer a business background, a politics background?
Well, I mean, what I'm really keen to see actually is a wide range of applications, you know, so that we have the best choice available to us. But you know, it is going to be, it's sensible, I suppose, that the person has to have understanding of a regulatory environment, understanding of a bit of a financial background, but also an understanding of football itself and the unique business model that football is. So, you know, there's a lot of qualities that we'll be looking for. I suspect there's going to be a lot of interest in this role, and I look forward to seeing those applications. Obviously, it has to go through the proper process that we, you know, any sort of appointment like this usually goes through. But I'm really excited to see who might apply for this.
What a difficulty as well, I suppose, is that there's going to be, not in a Nottingham Forest Luton sort of way, but there's going to be so much scrutiny of the independence of the regulator. We'll come on to opponents of the bill later, but there will be people, unfortunately, who look to undermine the integrity of the independent regulator. So that makes the recruitment process that much more difficult in a way, doesn't it?
Well, look, you are right. Of course, it will come under a lot of scrutiny. And the independence bit has been really important because we want to reassure everybody that this isn't about, you know, government interference in football, or and reassure the likes of UEFA and FIFA that this is truly independent. And we've, and it, you know, there was a bit of criticism yesterday that it's taken this long to get the bill to the floor of the House. I don't make any apology for that because I wanted to make sure it was constructed properly and that it would give that real assurance that this regulator will be independent. And therefore, yes, I mean, whoever gets appointed as chair will come under scrutiny, and that's fair enough. I get that. That is part of the role, and I'm pretty sure that all those that apply for it will have their eyes firmly wide open as they think about that.
One of the questions that our listeners have asked very frequently is how much the regulator will cost per year, if you can cost it annually, and who will be paying?
So our initial assessment is around 10 million, but, you know, we've made sure that it has to be proportionate, has to be really careful. We don't want, you know, sort of empire building, but we want to make sure that it's properly resourced to do its job properly, because that's critical. And fans, I'm pretty sure, would expect it to be resourced to be able to do that job effectively. The costs will come through from the clubs. There will be a levy, but of course that will be proportionate to the size of the club, where they are in the leagues, where they are in the pyramids. So, you know, I'm pretty sure that this will be, and I've gone through this really carefully. I'm very confident that this is absolutely affordable for the clubs, because ultimately, at the end of the day, the benefit of this is financial stability for English football. So it's a price worth paying.
I want to bring Kieran in a moment because I know he's particularly interested in the National League and he wants to ask you a question on that. But another question that we've been asked a lot is backstop powers and what actually is meant by backstop powers.
So, look, you know, your listeners will know better than anybody that the discussions about a, you know, an updated deal has been going on and on and on. And we really still want football to come up with a deal itself. And we, in every meeting I've had with each of the stakeholders, you know, I've encouraged that to happen. So is the Secretary of State. We desperately want them to come up with a deal. And it is a unique situation because, as I mentioned yesterday, this is a commercial arrangement of, you know, bigger businesses giving smaller businesses money. And so it's quite a complex area. And we're still pushing them to come up with that deal. We want them to have that negotiation. We want them to put an offer on the table. But we recognize that fans want to see more certainty. And that is why we have put this backstop within the bill so that if it gets to the point where no deal has been reached, those negotiations are getting nowhere, then, you know, one of them can then apply to the regulator to instigate the backstop. And that what that means is that the regulator will then assess the situation, and if they conclude that actually, you know, a new deal is desperately needed, they will get the interested parties around the table first, try and broker a deal between them. If that fails, then the, you know, the ultimate step is that both sides have to put a bid in, if you like, of what they think is the right amount. And then the regulator will carefully consider that against all of the information they have through things like the State of the Game report and a really good understanding of what the finances are. But as I say, you know, that is a backstop. We actually want football to do this themselves because actually we think they'll get a better deal if they do have that negotiation.
It's going to be difficult, though, Minister, because unfortunately, as one Premier League club owner said to me, and I won't name him, what have the EFL got to negotiate with? I mean, there's essentially, so that's the big issue, isn't it? And we'll come on to the intransigence of the Premier League, but when you've got owners thinking that way, I can't help but think those backstop powers are going to have to be needed at some stage.
And that's precisely where we put them in there, because, you know, we had to make sure that there was something in legislation, you know, a statutory power that the regulator has to enable a deal to be done eventually. But and I hope the fact that that is there, that may well start to focus minds and actually get the two sides to come to an agreement before having to reach that stage, really.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I do have a few more questions for you, Minister. I know we're taking up a lot of your time here, but I want to bring Kieran in because it annoys me when Kieran gets paid as much as I do for standing there looking pretty. So I know, Kieran, you've got a couple of points you'd like to make about the National League in particular.
Yes, thank you, Minister, for coming on the show. We really do appreciate it. I think many fans were surprised at what we perceive to be the relatively late opposition to the idea of the regulator from the National League. Were you aware of this for some time? And secondly, is there therefore a case, and I personally am not in favour of this, for saying that the National League should be excluded from the remit of the regulator, given their opposition to the bill?
So, look, I mean, as I mentioned at the beginning, we've done a lot of engagement. I've had, you know, several meetings with the National League. I think there are, as always, there are different voices within it. But, yeah, you know, I understand where they came from in the end. I don't agree with it. I think, actually, this will benefit those clubs in the National League. And I'm not in favour of us excluding them, because, actually, it's those clubs are just as important to their communities as all of the clubs that were, you know, that were mentioned yesterday. So it's really, really important that for those communities to have confidence that the club that they love and they support is going to be well run, well managed, and is going to be sustainable for the future. So I hope that as time goes on, and people see that the regulator is bringing benefit in terms of that sustainability for those clubs, that more members of the National League will realise it was a good thing after all.
Mm. Having said that, Minister, and you have kind of mentioned this in passing, some of the smaller clubs, for example, Dagenham and Redbridge, their chief executive is worried about the financial impact. You talked about spreading that financial cost, but he says most of their staff are volunteers, and he worries they might not be able to cope with new reporting rules, for example. So what help would there be for clubs at that level?
So look, and I get that argument, and I can understand that it would sound like, you know, a regulator sounds a big scary thing, and I understand that, and that's why we have listened to those voices, and that's why how a regulator will be working with clubs at the top of the Premiership, for example, will be different to how it works with clubs lower down the league. It's a proportionate approach, understanding the resources or the, you know, the fact that some of these, as you mentioned, are run by amazing volunteers. You know, it will be proportionate, but it's also an advocacy first approach. So working with the club rather than you know, a heavy stick. It's about, let's try and work together, understand your, you know, what's going on. Now, you know, most clubs will be doing the sort of financial plans. They will be thinking about what their future year looks like. They will be trying to understand where their money comes from. So it won't be much extra work, but it's just making sure there's another pair of eyes looking at it and ensure that that is a sustainable path for that club for the future.
Well, let's talk about the Premier League. Now you've mentioned them. I think most of us who have been doing this pod or listening to this pod, I don't listen to it much, to be honest. I'm on it, so I don't, that's a strange thing. The Premier League seemed to be vehemently opposed to it. First of all, were you surprised by the level of opposition? And secondly, do you have any idea what they mean by unknown consequences? Because it seems to me that the only argument they have, and we've seen Richard Masters rehearse his argument in the Times on a regular basis, is that there could be unknown consequences. There could be unknown consequences when I leave the house to get the paper in 15 minutes' time. So that if that's their only argument, I'd respect the Premier League more, and I support a Premier League club, I understand. I would respect that argument more if they said, these are the reasons we don't like it, even if that reason was we might lose money. Because then at least you know where they stand.
Well, you know, again, we have done a tremendous amount of engagement with the Premier League. We've been, you know, not just with the executive, but with individual clubs to listen to them. And, you know, there is a really valid point about let's not damage what is basically a really good success story around the world. You know, the Premier League is the ultimate league in the world when it comes to football. And of course we don't want to damage that. Why would we? It not only is great in some terms of soft power, but actually economically it's really important to the country. So And we've been careful. We've listened to some of the points that they've raised. We've tried to make changes to give reassurance. And again, I would say that these are big businesses, and surely they would be doing their own financial plans. Surely they will be making sure that they have the resources they need to run the club, and that they want to do everything they can to make them sustainable. So I don't understand they have any, you know, I really don't think they have anything to fear. In terms of the unintended consequences, well, you know, I've gone through this bill so many times. I'm testing myself. Our colleagues here in the department have stress tested it. I can't think of any unintended consequences, but if they've got an idea of what they are, as we have done in the past, we're here to continue to listen.
I wouldn't expect you to name them, Minister, but have any Premier League clubs individually approached you with specific worries about the bill?
I mean, there have been, yes, but there have been some that welcome it as well. So, you know, it's a mixed bag. And I think you get that in all of the leagues, you know, if I'm being honest, and that's fair enough. I just hope that, you know, that's why I'm really keen to get this up and running, because I think once it's in place and people see what it's actually doing, I think most people will realise this was a good decision.
Yeah, the trouble is the nature of the Premier League itself, because the three promoted clubs at the end of this season, including yours, hopefully, may well have completely different views than the three relegated clubs in this. So you might find a more pliable Premier League this season than the season after that. That might be replaced. It's people can't get their head around the fact that the Premier League consists of the 20 clubs that are in it at any given time, rather than this nebulous organisation that are just reacting negatively to cause you trouble.
So, you know, I mean, some clubs have been more vocal, shall I say, with us about their concerns. And I get it. You know, some of these are legitimate concerns. They're good questions and they're good challenges for us. I think that's what's made this bill even better, because we have had that challenge from those clubs. But other clubs within the Premier League have actually said, actually, we think this is a good thing. We can see where you're going. We understand what you're trying to achieve. And, we do think it's good. And as you say, yeah, because the clubs will go up and down, people's perspectives may change. But it's always the same in these environments, isn't it, where something is about to come and they haven't actually seen it working in practice. People do have concerns, and I get that. But I feel really confident that once this is up and running, people will realize that this was a good decision, because it means that we can identify the individuals who own the clubs. We can do a proper test to make sure that they are fit and proper people, and that they have the finances to run that club, and that fans are going to be engaged, you know, over and over, and they have that, you know, minimum standard of fan engagement, which is where all of this came from in the first place. The fans are at the heart of this. And I have to say, I agree with you. I haven't met a fan yet that isn't in favour of this. Even some fans, I slightly changed that. Some fans who at the beginning of the process were sceptical are now actually really on side. And that even happened in the chamber yesterday. You know, people like MPs like Martin Vickers said initially he was, you know, against the idea. But as he's looked into the detail a bit more, as he's seen the construction of the bill, he's now convinced it's a good idea and he was supporting it yesterday.
Why was he against the bill initially, do you know?
So I think it was more about, is this over-regulating football? Is there a danger of making it, you know, really bureaucratic and all that sort of stuff? And I get that. And that's why we've gone with this sort of proportionate and advocacy-first approach, because it will mean that it gets to the source of the issues and, you know, deals with it in an effective way, but without making it too burdensome for clubs, particularly those down the leagues, as you referred to earlier.
Just a couple more questions for you, Minister. You mentioned fit and proper persons. This question, you may not be surprised to learn when you hear it, was mostly asked by Reading fans. There's a lot of people, including Reading fans, want to know if the regulator will be able to act retrospectively. In other words, would they be able to strip existing rogue owners from their clubs?
So initially, obviously, if people are coming into, they will go through the fit and proper test. But if evidence, and it has to be hard evidence, but if there is hard evidence that a current owner, there is something that isn't right there, they can do that test. Because, and that's what we need to do, because if, you know, someone might not be fit and proper for, you know, from the moment they've passed the fit and proper test, it doesn't mean that they'll always be fit and proper. They may do something or be involved in something that sort of changes that. So there is scope for the regulator to assess current owners if new information comes to light about, you know, about who they are or any issues that may need to be addressed.
Two more questions. And they're general / personal questions. When I first started doing this pod 4 years ago, I was surprised, horrified, if you like, to learn about the state of football finances. When you took over your current role, were you equally as surprised to learn about how, you know, the disproportionate distribution of money in the game?
So my first, I remember it really clearly, my first meeting when I was appointed as minister was with the Football Supporters Association and a handful of representative fans from clubs that had gone through really challenging times. And just listening to those stories, you know, made me realise there's something really bad here. And the one that really stuck in my mind was the Blackpool fan who said to me, you know, we had to boycott our own club for 5 years to be able to try and get change. And she said, you don't understand what it's like not to go to the club you love for 5 years. And that made me, almost in that instance, even though I'd looked at the fan-led review and so on, just that testimony made me realise that action needs to be taken here. And that's why we're doing it, because those fans' voices are the fans that we have listened to the most. Because, you know, football clubs up and down this country were established ultimately by their communities and their fans. And they keep going because of their fans. And so the fans need to have that voice.
One final question, Minister, and I'm going to get Jeremy Paxman on you here now. I demand an answer to this one. VAR, where do you stand?
Oh God!
Because it's Coventry. never mind Nottingham Forest, Luton. It's Coventry fans who are the most hard done by the weekend. How that game ended with that terrible decision. So come on, No, Minister, are you going to ban it?
Well, it's not in my gift to ban it. It's football's job to decide whether or not to continue with it. But I was in my local pub watching that match and really felt for them. And I have to say, the deputy chief whip, he's a good friend of mine, Marcus Jones. He's a big Coventry fan. Uh-huh. And he was chewing my ear all day yesterday about this, telling me to look at it from a different angle. And I said, it's not my decision. It's up to football. So I've pointed him in the direction of the football authorities to make his case.
There's just the sound of 55 million people up and down the country go, what? I'd just come back from the Palace game, so I was in a good mood anyway. And my son was watching. My son has views on Manchester United, so it was literally 5 minutes to go. And I don't think I've ever celebrated a Palace goal like I've celebrated that Coventry goal before it was disallowed.
It was a phenomenal match.
It was a great game. It was, as the broadcasters say, it was a great advert for English football.
Yeah, so definitely.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's very kind of you. We do appreciate you taking time out of your schedule, and good luck with the bill. As I said, I won't be voting for your party at the next election, but although I'm checking to see if there's any signs of hell freezing over, but at the moment I don't. But I'm also I like to think that I'm grown up enough to acknowledge that another party is doing a decent thing here, as with David Cameron back in the day with gay marriage. So I think what the government is pushing through in this bill is absolutely fantastic. And I've, like every other football fan, I can only wish you well in the passing of the legislation and wish you well in pushing it through against opposition from the usual suspects. So good luck with that, Minister, and thank you for joining us.
Well, no, thank you for having me. It's been really enjoyable. And, you know, I actually want to say a big thank you to all those that have been involved in getting us to this position. You know, if it wasn't for all those fans giving up their time, providing the evidence, for Tracy Crouch and Kevin Miles and all of those involved, and you know, Kieran, the support you've given in terms of the providing the evidence, it's made it a compelling case. And that's why I think the bill was so warmly welcomed yesterday, because it's based on evidence.
Yeah, and also thank you for the image of the Deputy Chief Whip phoning you up immediately the whistle went to demand you do something about that dreadful
miscarriage. Usually when you get a phone call from the Whip's office, you panic.
Yeah, thank you so much. We really appreciate that.
My pleasure.
I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Kieran, I could not pick apart, because that would imply criticism, but I could go through every answer he gave to discuss it with you, because I thought he was very interesting. I thought it was particularly interesting to hear that individual Premier League clubs have been climbing in of their own accord to try and influence the outcome of the independent regulator. But two things I found particularly interesting. I thought that answer about the first thing he did when he got the job, the ministerial position, was to talk to the Football Supporters Association, which strikes me as a sensible thing to do. And his story about listening to the Blackpool fan who explained how desperately difficult it was to boycott your own club in an attempt to bring the owner to some sort of clarity. I thought that was a really interesting insight. And also, I expected the answer to the question about retrospectively being able to deal, the independent regulator that is, being able to deal with dodgy club owners now, I thought the answer to that would be no. But indeed, it wasn't. So I found that very, very interesting. Also, I have to say, in ministers' to his credit, that it was suggested that I call him Minister first time I spoke to him, and then called him Stuart after that. But I so enjoyed channeling my inner Jeremy Paxman that I decided to keep calling him Minister, because childishly, it just made me smile every time I went, okay, Minister, right. So I apologise. If anybody's out there thinking, well, that's Stuart Andrews up himself demanding to be called Minister, it was entirely my decision.
Yes, I thought it was. I thought he was very fair, and clearly, and what impressed me was that he was over his brief. You know, he'd been involved. I've got a relationship with DCMS, as you know, and I know just how thoroughly they have been through all of the individual sections and subsections of the bill, looking for unintended consequences. You know, what are the implications? And Stuart used the right phrase, stress testing. If we do this, how does that implicate in respect of attracting future investment? What about the relationship with the European and worldwide football authorities? Does this constitute government interference? So is it going to reduce the popularity? And let's be honest, the success of English football is driven by the Premier League. And the success of the Premier League is driven by half a dozen clubs. And let's be honest, those clubs are not Brighton or Crystal Palace. You know, we think we do far more than just be bit parts. But in terms of the global appeal and the global audience, and you know, having got to know some of the people involved who are civil servants, who are incredibly committed to this, I think not on an emotional level, but believing that they want to do something right, because football is so much more than kicking a ball about. And you know, that's one of the reasons why we set up the show in the first place. I felt his answers were fair and measured. In relation to the owners' stripping of relationships with clubs, that will be, in my understanding, very much a last resort. And it still begs a further question. If you've got a club which is losing £2 million a month and you take the owner away, well, what are you going to do with those ongoing losses? So I think that has to be thought through. But my view is that this legislation will actually, it won't put off owners. It will put off bad owners. And I think it will attract people who want to enter an industry where they feel that there is a degree of integrity, where there is the opportunity, A, to invest, B, to have fun. You know, and that's what football should be about as an owner as well. You know, celebrating the victories and having people chanting your name and getting the reputation that you get and so on. So it's to me, it's a bit like having a row of four or five houses and you stick a burglar alarm on yours. The chances are that the rogue is going to go, well, burglar alarm there, I'm going to move across to the next one. And by the next one, and I don't mean necessarily another sport, but perhaps another industry. And ultimately, that's not fair on that business or that industry who is going to be affected. But football is special. And you know, it's not going to stop people being rogues. I think it's going to reduce the attractiveness of football to rogues.
Yeah. Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod as well, that'd be very kind of you, and it will get you access to our chat community and our regular quizzes, and you can do all that by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com, and you can go to the same website if you want to buy our book or get yourself a Price of Football t-shirt. Thank you for listening. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.